This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of juvenile idiopathic arthritis from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Juvenile idiopathic arthritis is a chronic autoimmune inflammatory arthritis lasting greater than 6 weeks in a patient younger than 16 years of age that typically presents with morning joint stiffness and ocular infections. The diagnosis is one of exclusion, and presence of infection must be ruled out. One of the following must be present to confirm the diagnosis: rash, idiocyclitis, pericarditis, tenosynovitis, intermittent fever, presence of RF, C-spine involvement, and or morning stiffness. Treatment is usually immunomodulating drugs and frequent ophthalmologic exams. Now let's get into the episode. Starting with epidemiology, in terms of demographics for juvenile idiopathic arthritis, females are more commonly affected than males. In terms of anatomic location, as far as joint involvement in juvenile idiopathic arthritis, the knee is the most commonly affected, then the hand/wrist, then the ankle, then the hip, and finally the C-spine. Moving on to etiology, as far as genetics, HLA markers associated with juvenile idiopathic arthritis includes DR4, which is associated with polyarticular juvenile idiopathic arthritis, while DR8, DR5, and DR2.1 is associated with posiarticular juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Keep in mind that patients are RF seropositive in less than 15% of cases. Moving on to diagnostic criteria, remember once again that juvenile idiopathic arthritis is a diagnosis of exclusion, and you must rule out infection first. Once you rule out infection, one of the following must be present to make the diagnosis: rash, presence of RF, iridocyclitis, C-spine involvement, pericarditis, tenosynovitis, intermittent fever, and morning stiffness. Associated conditions with juvenile idiopathic arthritis include C-spine involvement, ocular involvement, and Still's disease. In terms of C-spine involvement, remember that this condition may lead to kyphosis, facet ankylosis, and atlantoaxial subluxation. In terms of ocular involvement, typically this consists of iridocyclitis, which is a type of anterior uveitis. Ocular involvement is frequently indolent in these patients and requires immediate ophthalmologic evaluation for slit lamp examination. Keep in mind that this condition can lead to rapid loss of vision if untreated, and there's also increased risk with a positive ANA titer. Finally, Still's disease is another potential associated condition with juvenile idiopathic arthritis. This is characterized by acute onset juvenile rheumatoid arthritis with multiple joint involvement, fever, rash, and splenomegaly. Again, it's important to mention that infection must be ruled out. Males and females are equally affected in Still's disease, and this condition usually presents at age 5 to 10 years of age. Now, let's go over the classification for juvenile idiopathic arthritis. In terms of onset, early onset denotes onset before teenage years, and late onset denotes onset during the teenage years or later. So, with respect to the classification of juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, there are three main types: polyarticular, which make up 30% of cases, posiarticular, or oligoarticular, which makes up 50% of cases, and systemic, which makes up 20% of cases. So starting with polyarticular, hand/wrist involvement is most common. The deformity is typically wrist ulnar deviation and flexion with MCP stiffness in extended, swollen, and radially deviated digits position, and keep in mind that there is a 60% remission rate. Polyarticular juvenile rheumatoid arthritis cases typically have greater than 5 joints involved. They have small joint involvement, for example, the hand and the wrist. There are symmetric findings, and females are more commonly affected than males. Moving on to posiarticular or oligoarticular juvenile idiopathic arthritis, this is the most common type. Early onset is associated with iridocyclitis in 50% and chronic uveitis. Be sure to obtain an ophthalmology consult in these patients, and remember that they require frequent ophthalmologic exams. That is every 4 months if ANA positive, and every 6 months if ANA negative. Girls are affected 4 times more often than boys in early onset. Peak age is 2 to 3 years. Late onset is seen more frequent in boys, and the typical finding is a limp that improves during the day. Remember that the posiarticular type of juvenile idiopathic arthritis has the best prognosis for long-term remission, seen in 70% of cases. The posiarticular form of juvenile idiopathic arthritis will typically have less than 5 joints involved. There tends to be large joint involvement versus polyarticular, where you may see involvement in the knees and ankles. There are typically asymmetric findings compared to polyarticular. For example, you may see leg length discrepancy, and the involved limb ends up longer. The male-to-female ratio is 1 to 4, and the ages affected is typically 2 to 3 years of age. Finally, the systemic form of juvenile idiopathic arthritis includes Still's disease and has the poorest prognosis. These patients have systemic symptoms like rash, fever, and multiple joint involvement. They may have anemia, a high white blood cell count, elevated ESR, CRP, and platelets, hepatosplenomegaly, lymphadenopathy, and pericarditis. Males and females are equally affected, and this condition is seen in ages 5 to 10 years of age. Moving on to the presentation of juvenile idiopathic arthritis, symptoms include morning stiffness and joint pain, visual changes, and fever. Physical exam will reveal rash and iridative cyclitis, which can lead to rapid loss of vision if untreated. Moving on to imaging, radiographs are often negative at presentation. You may find juxta-articular late osteopenia and joint destruction, which can be seen if the disease is progressive, and be sure to obtain flexion extension neck radiographs to rule out atlantoaxial instability. As far as other studies to obtain, in terms of laboratory studies, be sure to obtain a rheumatoid factor, ANA, and basic serology. As far as rheumatoid factor, as we mentioned previously, juvenile idiopathic arthritis patients are RF seropositive in less than 15% of cases. These are associated with a higher incidence of chronic, active, and progressive disease, often results in more destructive degenerative joint disease, and is more likely to progress into adult rheumatoid arthritis. Keep in mind that rheumatoid factor seronegative is more common. In terms of ANA in the setting of juvenile idiopathic arthritis, remember that ANA positive is diagnostic. Finally, in terms of basic serology, values are often normal and are not diagnostic. Now, let's talk about the treatment of juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes immunomodulating drugs, or DMARDs, which stands for disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, and frequent ophthalmologic exams. This is indicated as the first line of treatment. So in terms of medications, DMARDs, or disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs, are a new class of medications that have had significant impact on outcomes. These medications include, but are not limited to, etanercept, which is a TNF inhibitor, rituximab, which is a chimeric monoclonal antibody against CD20 on the B-cell surface, and azathioprine, which is a purine synthesis inhibitor. Another medication option is high-dose aspirin / NSAIDs, but keep in mind that salicylates are now used less frequently secondary to DMARD success. Occasionally, gold may be used in these patients, as well as intra-articular steroid injections. Non-operative management also includes frequent ophthalmologic exams, specifically a slit lamp examination twice yearly if ANA negative, and every 4 months if ANA positive. Keep in mind that progressive iridocyclitis can lead to rapid loss of vision if untreated. Operative options for juvenile idiopathic arthritis include synovectomy, epiphyseodesis, which is indicated for leg length discrepancy, where the affected leg is typically longer in oligoarticular disease. Corrective osteotomies are indicated for extremity deformity, however, this option is deferred until skeletal maturity. Finally, arthrodesis and arthroplasty can be indicated for severe disease. Now, let's end this review session talking about the prognosis of juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Keep in mind that 50% of patients have symptoms that resolve without sequela, 25% are slightly disabled, and 25% have crippling arthritis or blindness. The best prognosis is posiarticular, then polyarticular, and then systemic. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic might be tested. First question. A 5-year-old girl presents with an 8-week history of pain and swelling in the right knee, right shoulder, and left elbow after returning from summer camp. She denies any antecedent trauma, fevers, or rashes. Antibiotics prescribed by her primary care doctor have provided no significant relief, but she reports feeling better at the end of the day. Labs reveal a negative rheumatoid factor. Which of the following is most commonly associated with her diagnosis? And the choices are 1, cardiomegaly, 2, facial nerve palsy, 3, uveitis, 4, lower limb hemihypertrophy, and 5, meningitis. The correct answer to this question is 3, uveitis. So in a 5-year-old female without a history of trauma or rashes and with persistent oligoarthritis that improves during the day, the most likely diagnosis is juvenile idiopathic arthritis, or JIA. Early onset JIA is associated with chronic uveitis. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, cardiomegaly is incorrect, as pericarditis, not cardiomegaly, is associated with juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Answer 2, facial nerve palsy is incorrect, as bilateral facial nerve palsy is associated with Lyme disease, not juvenile idiopathic arthritis. And 4, lower limb hemihypertrophy, and answer 5, meningitis are both incorrect, as there is no association of juvenile idiopathic arthritis with lower limb hemihypertrophy or meningitis. To quickly review, juvenile idiopathic arthritis is defined by the American College of Rheumatology as persistent arthritis and swelling in one or more joints for 6 weeks or longer in a patient younger than 16 years of age. It is a diagnosis of exclusion, usually entailing pattern recognition after a thorough history and physical exam. Serologic studies include rheumatoid factor, anti-nuclear antibody, and HLA-B27, which may be helpful to rule out other etiologies like septic arthritis, systemic lupus erythematosus, and rheumatic fever. However, these are neither sensitive nor specific. In patients with juvenile idiopathic arthritis, evaluation for possible uveitis by an ophthalmologist should be considered. Although this patient could have Lyme disease given the likely recent exposure to ticks during her camping trip, the lack of a rash, unresponsiveness to antibiotics, and the polyarthritic nature make it less likely. Arvikar et al. Compared clinical features of systemic autoimmune arthritides to those of Lyme arthritis. They found that patients with Lyme arthritis usually had a clinical picture of monoarticular knee arthritis, whereas patients with systemic autoimmune arthritis manifested with polyarthritis. They concluded that systemic autoimmune arthritis with or without a history of Lyme disease should be treated with disease-modifying anti-rheumatic drugs or DMARDs. Punaro et al. Reviewed common rheumatologic conditions in children who may present to orthopedic surgeons. For juvenile idiopathic arthritis, they reported a typical history of oligoarthritis for 6 weeks or more in a white female patient with a peak onset between ages 1 and 3 years. Uveitis was typically chronic, bilateral, and asymptomatic. They concluded that while serologic tests were useful in excluding other diagnoses, they were less useful in confirming juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Moving on to the next question. In which of the following clinical scenarios would an urgent ophthalmology consultation be warranted to mitigate potential irreversible complications of the primary pathology? And the choices are 1, a 4-year-old male with proportionate dwarfism secondary to an autosomal recessive mutation resulting in L-alpha-iduronidase deficiency, 2, a 5-year-old male with proportionate dwarfism secondary to an X-linked recessive mutation resulting in sulfo-iduronate sulfatase deficiency, 3, a 6-year-old female with 2 months of persistent left knee swelling and associated stiffness, intermittent fever, and elevated ESR, 4, a 7-year-old male with developmental delay, dolichocystinemia, and positive urine nitroprusside test secondary to a cystathionine B synthase deficiency, and 5, a 10-year-old developmentally normal male with dolichocystinemia, generalized ligamentous laxity, and pectus carinatum. The correct answer to this question is 3, a 6-year-old female with 2 months of persistent left knee swelling and associated stiffness, intermittent fever, and elevated ESR. So urgent ophthalmology consultation for a slit lamp examination is warranted for the 6-year-old patient with juvenile idiopathic arthritis in order to rule out anterior uveitis. Ocular involvement in the disease process may lead to rapid and irreversible vision loss if not caught and appropriately treated early. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, a 4-year-old male with proportionate dwarfism secondary to an autosomal recessive mutation resulting in L-alpha-iduronidase deficiency is incorrect, as this patient presents with Hurler syndrome, and while corneal clouding is characteristic, the process is due to glycosaminoglycan infiltration of the cornea and cannot be mitigated by ophthalmologic intervention. Answer 2, a 5-year-old male with proportionate dwarfism secondary to an X-linked recessive mutation resulting in sulfo-iduronate sulfatase deficiency is incorrect, as this patient presents with Hunter syndrome, which may sometimes present with mild corneal clouding similar to Hurler syndrome, but is more often associated with clear corneas. Answer 4, a 7-year-old male with developmental delay, dolichocystinemia, and positive urine nitroprusside test secondary to a cystathionine B synthase deficiency is incorrect, as this patient presents with homocystinuria. Although inferior lens dislocation is common, this is not an urgent diagnosis and does not result in irreversible blindness. Ophthalmologic intervention cannot prevent but is required to treat this complication. Finally, answer 5, a 10-year-old developmentally normal male with dolichocystinemia, generalized ligamentous laxity, and pectus carinatum is incorrect, as this patient presents with Marfan syndrome. Superior lens dislocation is common with this pathology, but similar to homocystinuria, this is not an urgent diagnosis and cannot be prevented by early ophthalmologic evaluation. To quickly review, juvenile idiopathic arthritis is characterized by persistent arthritis in any individual joint for greater than or equal to 6 weeks. The diagnosis of juvenile idiopathic arthritis is one of exclusion and requires onset of symptoms by age 16. The most common subtype of juvenile idiopathic arthritis is oligoarticular, which typically presents in females between 1 to 3 years of age, most often as morning stiffness and a relatively painless limp. The knee is most often affected. Uveitis is a common systemic manifestation of the disease process and is most often asymptomatic, with up to 30% of patients experiencing loss of vision. This can be mitigated by early detection via slit lamp examination and subsequent ophthalmologic intervention. Punaro reviews the presentation and orthopedic manifestations of juvenile idiopathic arthritis. The authors note that while the diagnosis may be difficult due to the nonspecific presentation, early ophthalmologic evaluation is important for detection and treatment of ocular manifestations of the disease. The article by Sherry et al. Is an overview of new treatment methods, including intraarticular joint injections of methotrexate and etanercept, which have produced giant leaps in the treatment of the associated joint inflammation and resultant destruction. Moving on to the next question. A 14-year-old female has anal hemorrhoids. The general surgical team has asked for a consultation in regards to her history of hand, wrist, and ankle joint pain and swelling over the past 3 years. Her physical examination reveals a swollen left wrist, right knee, and left ankle. Lab work shows low hemoglobin, low albumin, elevated erythrocyte sedimentation rate, or ESR, elevated anti-nuclear antibody, or ANA count, and a negative rheumatoid factor. Radiography of the affected joints are normal. What additional workup is required prior to a rectal surgery? And the choices are 1. C-reactive protein, or CRP, 2. Synovial fluid analysis of affected joints, 3. Blood cultures, 4. Cervical radiographs, and 5. Bethesda assay. The correct answer to this question is 4. Cervical radiographs. So this patient has a diagnosis of juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Flexion extension C-spine radiograph should be ordered to rule out atlantoaxial instability prior to surgery. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, C-reactive protein is incorrect, as both ESR and CRP are usually elevated in this condition and provide no further benefit for the operative management of this patient. Answer 2, synovial fluid analysis of the affected joints is incorrect, as this patient has chronic joint swelling and pain. Joint aspirates and synovial fluid analysis would not be required. Answer 3, blood cultures is incorrect, as there is no suspicion for an acute infection. Therefore, blood cultures are not required. Finally, answer 5, Bethesda assay is incorrect, as a Bethesda assay is used to measure the amount of factor 8 or 9 antibody in the blood for patients with hemophilia. To quickly review, juvenile idiopathic arthritis is a persistent autoimmune inflammatory arthritis lasting more than 6 weeks in a patient younger than 16 years of age. Serologic testing for this condition will usually show elevated ESR-CRP, low hemoglobin, low albumin, and an elevated anti-nuclear antibody or ANA count, as well as negative rheumatoid factor and positive HLA-B27. Radiographs of the C-spine should be considered in patients undergoing intubation, as cervical kyphosis, facet ankylosis, and atlantoaxial subluxation is associated with this condition. Punaro et al. Reviewed rheumatologic conditions in children. The typical patient with oligoarticular juvenile idiopathic arthritis is a white female with a 5-to-1 female-to-male ratio, with a peak onset between ages 1 and 3 years old. Nearly half of patients have monoarticular involvement, with the knee and ankle being most commonly involved. Uveitis is typically chronic, bilateral, and asymptomatic. Borchers et al. Reviewed juvenile idiopathic arthritis. They state that no laboratory test can conclusively establish a rheumatic diagnosis. They state that laboratory tests will be negative for systemic inflammation, and an anti-nuclear antibody test has no use in the screening for juvenile idiopathic arthritis, as it has a high false positive rate. And moving on to the final question. A mother brings her 4-year-old daughter to you for evaluation of left knee swelling of 3 months' duration. The history, exam, and benign radiographs are consistent with a presumptive diagnosis of juvenile idiopathic arthritis. What would be the most likely result from serum analysis? And the choices are 1, normal erythrocyte sedimentation rate, or ESR, 2, normal rheumatoid factor, or RF, 3, normal C-reactive protein, or CRP, 4, elevated anti-streptolysin O antibody, or ASLO, and 5 elevated human leukocyte antigen B27 or HLA-B27. The correct answer to this question is 2, normal rheumatoid factor. So the patient's presentation is consistent with oligoarticular juvenile idiopathic arthritis. In these patients, serum RF levels are typically normal. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, normal erythrocyte sedimentation rate is incorrect, as in juvenile idiopathic arthritis, ESR is frequently elevated. Answer 3, normal C-reactive protein is incorrect, as in juvenile idiopathic arthritis, like ESR, CRP is frequently elevated. Answer 4, elevated anti-streptolysin O antibody is incorrect, as ASLO is elevated in post-streptococcal arthropathies, not juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Finally, answer 5, elevated human leukocyte antigen B27 or HLA-B27 is incorrect, as HLA-B27 is considered a risk factor for juvenile idiopathic arthritis if present, but is rarely a positive test finding. That's all for this review about juvenile idiopathic arthritis. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Also, if you aren't already, be sure to follow OrthoBullets on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube for daily high-yield content. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow right here on the OrthoBullets podcast.